Welcome to the Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Moss Iceland Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
What did the Karate Kid, Kill Bill, and Star Wars have in common? I don't know either, but you're going to find out on tonight's show, episode 9 of the Wretched Hive podcast, recording for Friday, April 29th. My name is Steve Baldwin, and the rest of the Wretched Hive is with me tonight. So let me introduce them to you. First, we have your friend and mine, Greg Lent.
Holy moly, Steve. I feel strong enough to pull the ears off of Gundark tonight. My God.
I love it. Love that energy, Greg. That is 100% better from last week. Well done, sir.
Or 2 weeks ago. Damn.
We also have, joining the show, as always, lifelong Star Wars fan, Scott Ivanski.
Yeah, I'm amped tonight, Steve. I watched the movie twice this week. I am jazzed. I'm ready to go. Let's get into some heavy, heavy shit tonight, man.
When you say the movie, is that you're talking about Force Awakens?
Episode 7.
Isn't it nice to have it on Blu-ray at home?
Just wonderful. Oh. I actually watched it on the DVD version and the Blu-ray version. I feel pretty well-rounded tonight.
Whoa, Scott. Step back, sir. Step right back.
Don't ever let anybody tell you you don't know how to party, Scott.
Party less.
You watched it on the DVD.
Like it's 1999, my friend.
Is Luke Skywalker?
You watched the whole DVD? I'm not even mad. I'm impressed.
We also have Nico Rodriguez. Oh, God, I blew that. The captain of the Millennial Falcon, that's Nico Rodriguez. Said.
Nico Rodriguez, reporting for duty.
Sorry, Nico.
Have another beer, Steve.
This is my second and a half glass here, so this could get ugly. And
oh, I thought it was already ugly from
as long as the power stays on.
Speaking of which, last but not least, we have Dave. Do not, under any circumstances, call him Harry Potter.
Is this going to be the only like pop culture bit of thing that doesn't talk about Prince in the last week and a half?
We just talked about it.
Just did.
There you go.
Just did.
1999 reference, my friend.
Way to go, Harry.
Hey, you know what though? There is, you know, Prince was on a Muppet show, and the original cast of Star Wars was on a Muppet show. So I'm just saying there is a connection there.
The purple totally is strong in you, my friend.
Yes. There you go. Yes.
So I'm just going to throw out there was a small little gathering of 4/5 of the hive. It was a quasi hive, if you will. and there was a little jam session going on. We played for a long time, maybe about 5 hours. Unfortunately, I think about 2.5 hours of that 5 hours was playing goddamn Purple Rain.
So, in other words, you played it three times, or we played it three. You played it three times.
At least.
Well, don't tempt me, or I'll bring up some of that audio because somebody posted video, so we could play it on this show.
I still haven't seen or heard any of that yet.
Nor will you.
Well, I was the fifth member enjoying a vacation in San Francisco away from Purple Rain.
You were the Pete Best of the Wretched Hive right now.
See, Nico, at least I'm not Glenn Frey. Pete Best was a drummer who was in the Beatles but was kicked out before they got famous.
See, that's why that's funny, Nico.
He's the fifth Beatle that doesn't exist. I get it. Fucking God.
Well, guys, just a couple of quick announcements before we get into the news. I want to turn everyone's attention to Facebook. We always mention our Facebook account, facebook.com/Wretched Hive Podcast is a great way to connect. But I have a surprise for everyone. We have a new way to connect with the Wretched Hive, and that is a voicemail line.
What?
That's right. We've got our own voicemail line. Call, leave us a voicemail, and you never know. It may get played on the air, on the podcast. That number is 562-455-4483. Or that's 562-455-HIVE, H-I-V-E.
Son of a bitch, Steve. How did you get that?
I'm magic. call and leave us a message, and you never know. It might get played on a future episode of the Wretched Hive podcast.
I gotta say, I'm pretty excited. I didn't know that was happening. I'm amped. I'm gonna call it.
Yeah, Steve's holding that on us. 455 or 445.
So I'll repeat the number: 562-455-4483. It's the Wretched Hive podcast voicemail line. 455-HIVE.
Wait, Greg, you can't call it right now. We're in the middle of the show.
Sure I can. What are you talking about? I can do whatever I want.
Okay, Greg Lent has his cans on, his headphones. That's cans if you work in the professional podcasting world. And he's got his phone wedged in between his cans and his ear there. Now he's got it taken off. But
what you doing in your own time there, pal?
So leave us a voice
between your cans.
Leave us a voice message. Give us feedback. Ask us questions. Tell us lewd stories. Whatever you'd like, and it might get on the air. So give us a call, people. 562-455-4483.
I think Greg's muting us. He's going to leave us a message.
No, I'm waiting for the voicemail to pick up right now. I had a little dialing malfunction. I'm old and
They make a pill for that, Greg.
And it's just now kicking in, so thank God they do.
Nice. Millennial Falcon, can you help out the old guy over there?
I am waiting for the voicemail to pick up, though.
You have to use your fingers, touch the screen.
Yikes.
Hi there, this is Greg. I'm a host of the Wretched Hive. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. Just want to say, love your guys' show. All right, keep it up.
Fantastic. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, woo!
Our first voicemail. That's kind of like our first rating on iTunes, actually. I think it was the same guy, I think.
You've got a reputation there, man.
I am that lame-ass internet troll who's got to post first on all of the comment pages.
Okay, now I'm going to take some time out from the show and go answer the first voicemail.
Well, I may be able to do that. Hang on. Let's see if this works.
Oh my god.
Let's see if I can pick this up here. We'll go. Let's see. I get an email when we get a message. Oh, there it is. All right. Let's see. Hang on. We're gonna get there.
If there were any doubts that we rehearsed the show, this is gonna kill it right there for everybody.
All right.
Intense radio right here.
Hi there. This is Greg. I'm a host of the Wretched Hive. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. Just want to say, love your guys' show. All right, keep it up.
I'm Greg. Host.
Listen, man.
This is so meta right now. I can't believe it.
All right. Well, you heard it here. How did that sound to you guys, by the way?
Clean.
Awesome. All right. Yeah. Well, that's that. 455-HIVE. That's area code 562. Leave us a message, and you make it on the show. And in the meantime, we've got some news.
From ABC News World Headquarters, this is ABC World News Tonight.
No, it's not. It's Star Wars news with the Wretched Hive.
So be it.
Well, the news keeps flowing, guys. Star Wars is hot. There is so much to talk about. And, guys, we're not the only ones talking about Star Wars. You've got none other than J.J. Abrams himself talking about Star Wars and prolificating on various topics within the Star Wars universe. And he was on stage. He shared the stage what was this? I think this was a film festival, and I'm sorry, I'm totally drawing a blank here. I lost my notes for a moment, but JJ was asked by a young member of the audience at this film festival. Maybe we can figure out what it was by the time this quote is done. But he was asked about Ray's parents, and he had a really a great answer. Check this out.
Ray's parents are not in episode 7. So I can't possibly, in this moment, tell you who they are. But I will say that it is, this is all I will say, it is something that Ray thinks about too.
So guys, that was J.J. Abrams, who, you know, this caught on like wildfire across the internet and the interwebs, because he's basically telling us Rey's parents are not in episode 7.
Lies.
What do you think?
Slander.
Does that mean that Luke Skywalker cannot be Rey's father?
No, I'd seriously doubt it. Come on. Technically, Luke's not even in the movie. 2 seconds at the end does not count.
He's in the movie. It counts.
Now, see, my theory still stands because Luke's hand is not in the movie, so she's still his clone.
I'm going to get all lawyerly, and when he says Luke's parents, plural, are not in the movie, that could still be a true fact. There could be a parent in the movie, though.
Yes, that is true.
But didn't he come back and recant that statement later on afterward? I had read that somewhere. Now I have to source myself.
Yeah, I think he clarified himself. By the way, this was at the Tribeca Film Festival. I think he came back after that quote and commented. Let me see. He says, this is in an article from The Hollywood Reporter. Obviously, it's not for me to talk about in this moment because it's Rian Johnson's story to continue now. The last thing I'm going to do is reveal something that he would be upset about. I want to make sure that Rian gets the courtesy that he showed me.
Okay, I'm going to hijack this a little bit because we've kind of put off this topic for a while, and we can really get into the meat and potatoes of this after a while, but I just want to say there was an article that I read a couple of months back now. It's a couple of months old, but it talked specifically about the theories about who the parentage may lie with and who the father is, who the mother is, or who the parents all overall. There's some really good ones out there, Luke Skywalker being the obvious, and that's the one I'm going with. Han and Leia as parents, though, I don't think that's a good idea, only because it makes both of them look like major jerks for really dumping their kid off and then not even saying anything when they come around to meeting her again. Mm-hmm. The one that I really found interesting was a just Leia theory, not Han and Leia, just Leia. I still don't think that flies because I think she would have said something, but I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the quote that I found from J.J. Abrams clarifying was that he was saying, what I meant to say was that she doesn't discover them in episode 7, not that they may not already be in her world. So by clarifying that, that still does put Luke, Leia, Han, Chewbacca, and C-3PO in the running.
That sounds like a retcon to me, though. He flat out said they're not in episode 7.
Yeah. And then he came back and said that she just hasn't discovered them yet.
Yeah, I think it's just him kind of backtracking on it and clarifying his statement to clear up the whole idea with Rian Johnson.
Let's also just be sure that we recognize that J.J. Abrams has not always been the most honest with characters in his movies.
What?
About? I've never heard that.
Star Trek fans.
That's right. Now he's getting the Star Wars fans. Not cool. Not cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I would love it if Rey was a Kenobi. And I know it probably can't be Obi-Wan because of the age, and it just doesn't line up time-wise. But, it would really add, I think, a lot to some of the dialogue that has played out in terms of, what Yoda says to Luke and what Obi-Wan says to Luke and the clues that they give. I think it would be fascinating if it turned out that there is another was Rey, and maybe not Leia.
Well, the thing, it can't be Ben Kenobi's kid, because the timeline doesn't work out, but she could be a granddaughter.
Yeah.
That kid would have been incubating for a mighty long time in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you figure, if Kenobi's on Tatooine, bumping around for 20 years while Luke is growing up to a whiny little kid, he's got plenty of time to have had his own kid there who would have been approximately a peer age for Luke. It's not out of the question, if you're going there, that person could have had a grandchild that winds up being Rey. The timeline does work for that.
Maybe she's a back to tank baby.
That's what I said.
Back to tank baby is my band name.
What exactly is a back to tank baby? Is that like, you know, you get impregnated by being in the jacuzzi of someone who ejaculates? Is that what you're saying?
So it's Luke's daughter, I'm telling you.
I thought it was some kind of new age birthing method or something like that. You know, oh, my wife and I, we're going to have back to tank babies. Oh.
Like test tube babies, but for Star Wars.
Right. I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say it's 3PO's kid.
That's what I said, right?
Right. I mean, look at that guy's popping up all the time, and he's cock-blocking Han every single moment he gets the chance. In Empire, what does he do? He pops in right when Han's making his move. What does he do in Force Awakens? Blocks him right when Han's about to get all emotional and sappy. There's 3PO. Han Solo? What are you doing here? By the way, I have a red arm. Look, I have no reason to be in this film. That's it.
Oh, is that in the show news this week? Thank God they finally cleared up how we got the red arm. Am I right?
Super lame.
Wondering why he had the. Now we all know. Mystery solved. Thanks, Star Wars. Wrap that up. Put that one to bed.
Can't they just do away with him already?
That is so lame. It was so lame.
So what was it? It was he was on a mission with another droid, and the droid walked out into some acid rain and was sacrificed himself to save 3PO or save whatever plans they were looking for, and the only thing that was left of this droid was the red arm?
Yes.
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah,
this other droid. Well, they were trying to capture this droid because it was from the First Order and it had some plans for something. And so he was a bad guy, and basically 3PO convinced him to be a good guy and share the knowledge with him of the Starkiller base. And then there was an acid rain, and they got separated from Poe. And then there was a beacon that had to be lit, and the bad guy droid was like, you know what, I give up on life because I've already shared all the secrets and they're going to destroy me, so at least I can do something good before I go. And he wandered out into the acid rain to flip the beacon to save 3PO, and all that was left was his arm, and 3PO kept it because his arm got damaged in some daring escape, and he kept his buddy's arm for a keepsake.
So that, ladies and gentlemen, was our new segment, Nico Reviews the Star Wars Comics. Thank you very much.
And so, by the way, spoiler alert.
So what you're saying is Chewbacca and Maz Kanata are Rey's parents. That's what you're saying.
Darth Plagueis is Rey's father.
I heard a really cool theory that Rey is a Palpatine baby.
I have heard that theory too.
Yeah, that's a good one. So it sort of goes like she's a child of the Force, right? Sort of like a reincarnation of Anakin. Is that
A Palpa Bacta baby?
Or are you talking about something different, Nico?
No, that like Emperor Palpatine had children and hid them from the world, and that she is spawn of that, and it's supposed to be some like weird two sides of the coin, that a Solo turned to the dark side and a Palpatine is coming to the light, and then it's going to be this weird that in future movies they could be role reverse, and that Rey could become a Sith when Kylo finds the light again and comes back.
What woman is hooking up with Palps? That's what I want to know.
Are we going to go back to that Force?
Sheeves? You talking Sheeves, Palps? Anybody?
That's right.
Oh, man.
Man, oh, man.
Steve, you shared with me that Child of the Force thing, and I thought that was an interesting theory. You know, I'm not really so much a fan of the Force chooses, you know, a host and makes a baby, and then this is the chosen one. A little too much of the Jesus story in there. It's such a weird thing for such a fantasy movie, or for such a popular fantasy. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying about that. It doesn't fit with the story in my head. It's not something that I follow with. But the Child of the Force, I can kind of go along with that. I kind of see it. I wouldn't like it if they would say, oh, well, this is Anakin Skywalker just reincarnated. Does it really have to be another Skywalker? And if it is another Skywalker, why from the history of time haven't they just like gotten all the Skywalkers together? Because they know that the next Skywalker is going to be the Jedi Master. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, when you start talking about reincarnation, my mind goes to Star Trek, right? It feels a little bit too sci-fi. I've had this conversation with a lot of, you know, I mean I'm a fan of Star Trek too. I love both franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Not nearly as much as I love Star Wars, but I do like Star Trek. And I've had the argument with other Trekkies that don't get Star Wars that Star Wars is more fantasy and Star Trek is more sci-fi.
Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. And so I sort of put the reincarnation bit in, like, didn't Spock reincarnate or came back to life at some point? I don't know the whole storyline, but
from the Genesis planet. Yes.
Right. So it just feels a little bit Trek-ish to me to talk about reincarnation and that whole line of thinking just doesn't feel Star Wars to me.
Yeah, but and I would totally agree that Star Wars is a fantasy movie set in space. I don't think there's anything really science fiction about it other than the fact that it takes place in space. If you're looking for science fiction, I think, you go towards the more of the Star Trek pre-J.J. Abrams stuff. But, the newer stuff is more kind of action oriented and really kind of brings it back to that fantasy realm. But as far as the Star Trek series, that was your sci-fi series back in the day. Definitely not Star Wars.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, talking about JJ again, nice transition. JJ, by the way, he was sharing the stage with Chris Rock, and he told a great little story that I wanted just to play, just because I love this story, about filming the final scene in The Force Awakens. This is good stuff. Check this out.
Here's what's amazing. When we shot that scene in Ireland on Skellig Michael, we were on this, it was what it looked like. And we're up there, and there could only be like 45 people on the crew, because you couldn't bring many people up there, and there was only one way up, which was the 642 stairs to the top. And so we're up there shooting the scene, and, you know, it's Ireland, so it's like, it's raining, then it's sunny, then it's raining, and it's sunny, you know, it's like, it's insane. And we're up there, and in between, you know, the shots, we're getting this thing, and I'm looking at him, and I realize he's the same age, exactly, that Alec Guinness was when he played Obi-Wan. And there he is, and I'm looking at him as the sort of mist is clearing, and I have my phone, and I put on the binary sunset cue, the John Williams wrote, you know. And I'm listening to this music, and I'm looking at Mark Hamill wearing these robes, and I literally start to get tear up. And I'm like, I just know this ending could really work. And of course, when you're working with John Williams for real, it's just cheating. Because no matter what you do, John Williams comes in, he's like, and he just makes it stop.
So I just love that. He just says, you know, working with John Williams is cheating. He says, you know, when you film your scene and you're not sure if it's going to work, and John Williams comes in and says, like, he does his hand motion, like, I got this, don't worry, you know. I just love that JJ is such a fanboy of John Williams, and I can just imagine JJ up there on Skellig Michael filming that scene and tearing up and playing the Star Wars music from his iPhone. I got a kick out of that. I thought that was really cool.
Would Mark Hamill, has anybody verified that? Mark Hamill the same age in 2016 as Alec Guinness was in 76?
Yeah, 76. No, I haven't. I can look that up, though.
Seems about right, though. I mean, 60s, right? Mid-60s?
Maybe I'm just looking at it from my seven-year-old eyes, but I mean, that Guinness. Just seems like he was so much older.
Alec Guinness was born 1914.
Wow. Wow. So in 72. Yeah, well, in 76, he would have been...
62.
62.
No, 60. Yeah, 62.
1949, yeah, 62.
That puts Mark Hamill was 60. 50, yeah.
Born 51. He's 64 right now, but that's not when the filming was.
2 years ago. Wow. Mark Hamill is a damn good-looking man for 62 years old.
Yeah, a lot less white hair than Sir Alec.
You know what, Greg? So are you, man.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
All right.
My heart went all a flutter for you.
Well, we've got more new Star Wars coming out, guys. We don't have to wait for Rogue One or even Episode 8. We've got Star Wars books. And there's a good one coming out. It's getting great reviews. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks talking about this Star Wars book that's coming out called Bloodline.
Has it been reviewed already?
I listened to a couple of podcasts that were talking about getting, they got preview copies and they were starting to read.
Nice.
So I haven't read a book review of it, but, this is a Bloodline by Claudia Gray. And, just seems like it's going to add a lot of, detail and sort of, build up about how the Resistance was formed, how the First Order got started, and the seeds of the First Order. There's a great article on StarWars.com that I think, Greg, you added to the show notes. Thank you for that. The politics of the era, Han and Leia's romance, many original characters. Got some input from Rian Johnson on this. So this almost seems like a must-read.
I was thinking the same thing. You know, I did not get around to reading The Lost Stars, even with the recommendations of both Steve and Dave. I did not read Lost Stars, but I think I actually may go out of my way to pick this one up, either in digital or... I'm not fooling myself. It's not going to be a hard copy, but I may pick it up in a digital format that I can listen to.
Lost Stars, Twilight in the Star Wars universe, I'm telling you.
Both of you guys liked it, too.
Yeah, I would not give it that review, but I really enjoyed Lost Stars.
That was fun. I'll add
this real quick. It's noted on one of the interviews that Rian Johnson actually contributed some of the material to Bloodlines, adds to the fact that he's directing the new movie. Kind of fascinating. I wonder what kind of input he had in that writing process.
Well, I mean, depending on what era it's kind of talking about for Han and Leia, I mean, if there's anything to do with Kylo Ren or what happened at the, you know, I'll call it the Jedi Academy with Luke, I mean, he would have to have input into that. Mm-hmm. But I'm really looking forward to it. I've already pre-ordered my copy. It'll be here Tuesday. I am ready to go.
Nice. So, I did read Lost Stars. I also bought Star Wars Aftermath.
Me too.
And I got about two chapters in, about a quarter of the way through, and I couldn't stick with it. It was a Star Wars canon product that I just could not, it didn't grab me.
I did stick with it. Okay. I did finish it, but I did not like it at all. And it was, for me, it was not so much a product of the author's writing, but it seemed like they were trying to use that book to set up all these different plot threads for things that would happen in other books later. Like you would have, you have the main storyline that's going through Aftermath, and every three chapters they would break up and do a chapter that just has nothing to do with anything that's happening in the book, and then that was all you would see of it. Like they had a chapter that was just about Han and Chewie flying around in the Falcon immediately after the Battle of Endor and getting word that the Imperial fleet had pulled out of Kashyyyk, and they decide to go to Kashyyyk to try to liberate it. And that's actually the follow-up book that's going to come out from Chuck Wendig in June, Star Wars Life Debt, which I'm assuming is them going there to try to liberate the Wookiees.
It's not Life Day, is it?
No, it's not Life Day.
Well,
excellent, though.
Speaking of Star Wars books, while we're on the topic before we move on, while I was in San Francisco, I stopped by Treasure Island, which is this little place between San Francisco and Oakland on the Bay Bridge, and they have a flea market there every Sunday, so we went on Sunday, checked it out. At one of the booths, there was a box of 23 different Star Wars novels in paperback. And I bought the entire box.
What?
Good on you.
I looked at them and I was like, I don't even know what order these go in. I don't have time to look at all this. Some other guy was grabbing some of them. And I looked at the vendor and I was like, hey, I'll give you $20 for this whole box. And he looks at them and he counts them and he's like, 25. And I was like, babe, I need a 5. And she spots me a 5, and I take the whole box, and the guy's got a book in his hand, and I was like, sorry, boss, I just bought that, and I grabbed it from him, and I walked away. So I have, like, 24 books in a giant box, and I'm going to have to get some help from the Hive, because I have no novel idea about how to set up any of those books, so you guys are going to have to help me timeline all of them so I can start reading them, catching up on the extended universe.
Let's do this shit right now. Let's go.
I was going to say Mr. Ivansky is going to be your best source for that.
Although if one of them is the courtship of Princess Leia, just throw it away now.
Burn it.
Just throw it away now.
It's fire, man. Fire fodder.
Was that the sequel to The Courtship of Eddie's Father? I mean, what is that?
No, it was – I mean, Scott, it seems like you're familiar with it too. And with all respect to the people who worked on that book, it is – one of the single worst science fiction or science fantasy, whatever you call it, works I've ever seen produced. It's just a horrible, horrible story about how Han Solo has to find a way to marry Princess Leia, even though the rest of the Alliance thinks we have to pick who her husband's going to be because she's actually royalty. It's just awful.
Dave, you're giving me shivers up my spine just even bringing up that much about that book. It is not a good book.
Well, Nico,
having read very little of the extended universe, even I know that that is widely considered the worst book of all of the expanded universe Star Wars novelizations. So,
and again, what Dave said, talented people are always involved in this this universe and creating this expanded universe, which is not canon anymore. But I will say this. We are all prone to just laying a steaming pile of crap every once in a while, and those people definitely did it. I'm not apologizing for that at all, because they should be apologizing for that book. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are the one who should be sorry.
Come find me. I'm on the Wretched Hive.
I'm sensing a bad Star Wars novel competition coming up soon.
Well, it's got a 3PO scene in it that it really brings home why Greg hates the character so much. It's 3PO actually trying to lay out a case for why Han Solo should be able to marry, you know, a princess. And if that doesn't send a shiver of horror up your spine, the two pages of monologue from 3PO really won't once you read it, I promise you.
I am not the one with the hate C-3PO.
That's Steve.
I would just like to say that's my hatred that you were speaking of.
Let the hatred flow.
I just assume hatred comes from Greg. I apologize.
I was thinking about we need to bring in the Imperial March music when I introduce Greg. Just the Dark Lord.
You know, it's funny. Well, I'll just let you a little window into his private life. That is my mom, his wife's ringtone for him when he calls is the Imperial March.
Why does that not surprise me at all?
Awesome. It's classic.
That's great.
This is great. Yeah.
I will say that since we jumped on the 3PO bandwagon of hatred, rewatching these two films over the past week, especially the lower quality DVD, holy crap, does 3PO look like crap. I mean, you guys brought this up on one of the previous podcasts, but it looks like somebody took steel wool and brushed him out. And I'm like, with the lower quality DVD, it really was just painful to the eyes. I'm like, somebody just edit this crap out, because I can't believe how bad they made him look in that film.
I think Kathleen Kennedy made like a paper mache costume for her kid, and they used it in the film. It looks horrible.
I don't know.
What were they thinking?
Yeah, that's not even me hating on the character or anything like that. It is a really horrible looking costume. You compare that costume with the Episode 4 costume, which looks fantastic.
Yes, and it's a lived in look.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is night and day how awful that costume looks.
Well,
to jump back to the books real quick, since I bagged so badly on The Courtship of Princess Leia, I want to throw out a plug for two other Force Awakened tie-ins that I read that were pretty good. Both of them are by Greg Rucka, who's a favorite author of mine. One is Before the Awakening, which is just three vignettes on Poe, Finn, and Rey, just kind of showing here's what they were doing right before the movie starts. And the other one is a Han Solo book called Smuggler's Run, that's just a Han Solo adventure immediately after the events of Episode 4. And it's good fun. It's like a $7 hardcover book. You'll read it in an afternoon, and you'll be glad you did. It's a lot of fun.
I would love to read Finn's, because it would just be a book about him scrubbing toilets.
No, he's actually a stormtrooper. He's actually a stormtrooper squadron leader at that point in the book, and he's actually top of his class.
I thought he was a janitor. He was sanitation.
That was before this. That was before he gets plugged into Captain Phasma's training program.
Okay. I'm going to throw this out there, since you guys just brought this up. But after, again, rewatching this movie twice, I picked up on a couple little things we need to really hit on. One is the horrible, horrible shots of stormtroopers in general has always been discussed and analyzed over the years. But if Finn is a janitor, basically, he is the best shot in the entire Imperial fleet, the First Order fleet. There is a scene where he is given Luke's lightsaber in Maz Kanata's castle. And after the attack happens, he runs out. He can't use the weapon. He picks up a gun, and without even looking, it's almost like a Han Solo shot, turns around, nails this guy dead center, first shot. These guys are standing right next to him. They've shot everywhere but Finn. So I'm
Have you seen the internet meme that's a picture of Finn and Rey, and it just reads, you know, if Finn hooks up with Rey, he'll be the first stormtrooper in history to hit something.
Yes,
brilliant.
So good.
Oh my god!
You know what's funny is, go ahead, Greg.
I was gonna say, troopers got a troop, baby.
Well, you know what's funny about that is, as a kid, I always sort of retconned in my own head about why the stormtroopers couldn't hit Luke and Leia on that bridge before, you know, he got the peck on the cheek and they swung across the bridge in the heroic moment there towards the end of Episode 4. And I always thought, well, they're clones of clones of clones of clones. And so there's degradation that happens, that maybe once upon a time in the Clone Wars, they could shoot and hit something. But in the current time, which is currently Episode 4, you know, they were clones of clones, and so that ability in them had been weakened or lost or something, had degraded over time. Now I've come to find out, just in the last maybe decade or so, that it's not, the stormtroopers of Episode 4 are not clones. They are enlistees into the Imperial Army, and that was a big game changer for me. So now I can't explain why the stormtroopers can't hit Luke and Leia.
The helmet, obviously, because Finn takes the helmet off and he's a sharpshooter badass.
Right. So wait, in Episode 4, they're not clones. When did this come up? What am I missing here?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Scott, because that's what makes that whole line funny when Luke walks in to save Leia and she says, "Aren't you a little short to be a trooper?"
Yeah. Because
they're all clones. They're all the same height.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Well, I'll have to go back and look that up, because I remember reading something about how the stormtroopers in Episode 4 were not clones. they were.
Prove it, Steve. Prove it right now.
Well, if you well if you take a look at the troopers in The Force Awakens, they're all different heights. They're all different sizes.
Yes. But it's clearly stated that they're not clones.
Yes.
That is stated in one of the scenes where they're talking about going back to the clone program.
Right. Right.
Prior to those events, instead of using whatever happened with Finn was where he was pulled from his family.
So you're contending that in episode 4, the stormtroopers were clones.
No clones, and your theory holds true. I think that, yes, over time that they lost the original DNA source from whatever Jango Fett. Mm-hmm. And you're right, it's a degradation in whatever the DNA structure has slowly fallen into bad territory, so to speak. They're just piecing together.
But in your opinion, Scott, in episode 4, clones or no clones?
I say clones.
I say clones.
Nico?
I say clones, but I'm trying to look it up right now.
Well, just to be a contrarian, I'm going to stick with no clones.
No, right. I'm going to say they're clones for sure.
All right.
Yeah. So it's 4 out of 5 hivers agree that they are clones.
We should.
Unfortunately, that does not qualify for a swing vote. So,
excuse me, I'm on StarWarsWikia.com, and it says here, unlike their predecessors, the majority of stormtroopers were non-clone recruits. Imperial cadets were shipped off to Imperial academies and subjected to rigorous training programs in order to produce highly trained shock troopers fiercely loyal to the Empire.
Check this out. That was on a Wikia. Steve just edited that before you looked it up.
Last edit, April 29th.
I'm checking the footnotes.
p.m.
Source, yeah, Long Beach,
yeah,
California.
Where is that sourced from?
It's sourced from Ultimate Star Wars.
So Star Wars... The Star Wars Wiki. What's the one that everyone uses?
Wikipedia.
We need look there. Look at Wikipedia.
I'm gonna say agree to disagree with the Star Wars page there.
The Ultimate Star. I want to know who Ultimate Star Wars is, and I think we're going head to head with these people.
Well, I just want to say, if I'm standing alone 1-4, and I win this one, you're all Bantha Poodoo.
I'm good with that.
That's all I have to say about that.
Ultimate Star Wars is a reference book written by Ryder Windham, Trisha Barr, Adam Bray, and Daniel Wallace, including a foreword by Anthony Daniels.
Adam Bray?
Oh, right there.
Ryder Windham.
Your argument is invalid.
Ryder Windham is legit. That's a legit guy. That's a Lucasfilm guy.
Adam Bray owes me money.
Didn't one of those write Courtship of Leia? I think that should tell you everything right there.
All right, we're going to research this one. We're going to get to the bottom of it. And in the meantime, we've got some Rogue One reconnaissance to take care of.
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the old Republic.
It's grounded, like a lot of subject views of what it's like to be really in a war in the Star Wars universe.
Attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide.
A rogue band of resistance fighters unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring new hope to the galaxy.
Rogue One Reconnaissance. Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Roger, stand one round elimination. Stand by.
So, guys, this week, not a whole lot of Rogue One news, but we had an important little tidbit that was discussed on the interwebs, and I'm looking at our link on the show notes is for hngn.com, and the story headline is Rogue One, a Star Wars story, spoilers, Lucasfilm exec debunks Snoke rumor. And so this is none other than Pablo Hidalgo with Lucasfilm, who is telling everybody to calm down. Snoke is not in Rogue One. This is a standalone story, has nothing to do with anything that you saw in TFA. This is This is, let's see, from, again, HNGN.com. Let's see. The latest rumor theory to gain traction online has to do with the upcoming Star Wars anthology standalone film Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. As can be seen in the above teaser trailer, and there's a link to the teaser, a mysterious cloaked figure kneels before a white pillar thought to be a Bacta tank, similar to the healing apparatus Luke Skywalker used in The Empire Strikes Back. Other keen-eyed fans have suggested that it's a cryotube used to suspend individuals in frozen animation. These observations and guesses have led to a great many theories surrounding the true nature of the scene. The most popular theory has emerged that Supreme Leader Snoke himself is in that tank. And then it goes on to say, creative executive Pablo Hidalgo, who serves in Lucasfilm's story group, officially debunked the rumor recently on Twitter. He tweeted out, Snoke is not in Rogue One, like in any way, shape, or form. This is a standalone movie. So that's coming from the most credible source, Pablo Hidalgo. Very, very credible, unless he's lying. Snoke is not in Rogue One. So then the question is, well then, what is that white pillar? Who is kneeling in front of it? And what significance does it have for the story, considering there's Imperial guards on either side?
Yeah, I think that's got to be some kind of manifestation of the Emperor, as we discussed 2 weeks ago. I'm still thinking that's probably the way it's going to go.
I agree. I think when he says it's a standalone movie, I take that to mean it doesn't have anything to do with the sequel trilogy that we have going on now. But just given the time frame that it's in, there's no way that it can't play with the toys of the original trilogy.
It has to. It runs right up into the original trilogy. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I've kind of analyzed the scene, and prior to Pablo's statement there, and even thinking that Snoke might be somewhat involved, because I think we mentioned it before, I still think that that cloaked figure, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's the Emperor himself. Mm. He's the one who has the black cloak that looks that shape, the way, I mean, it looks like a shot from Return of the Jedi. And I've thought about the Vader thing, and Vader doesn't wear a cloak over or a cape over his head. I'm thinking that it's the Emperor doing something there.
So I'm just spitballing here. I'm just throwing things out just kind of off the top of my head. So maybe that is the Emperor, and maybe inside, because there's been some conjecture that maybe that's a Bacta tank, maybe inside of there is some type of Vader rejuvenation tank because he can't live 24/7 in the suit.
That could be. The only thing that I don't like about that being the Emperor is that, well, I suppose, no, yeah, by that point, he's old and frail and wrinkled and ugly because he's been, you know, did the Mace Windu thing, and he's all, and he's moving up those stairs. He's got his arms out, the cloak is billowing behind him like he's got some speed. Like, he's an old man. What's he doing walking upstairs that fast?
Don't be dissing Papa Palpatine, man, I'm telling you.
No way.
Hey,
that's where I get all my pizza from. Papa Palpatine's.
Papa Palpatine's pizza, what can I get you?
Papa Palpatine's?
Well, apparently, according to some of you, you know, he fathers Rey in a few years, so he can't be in that bad of shape.
Hey, it could have been some sort of forced, maybe not forced, but force enabled conception.
Maybe they've got forced Viagra or something. What's going on there? Hey, the pipes still work, okay? He could be 90, he could be 800 years old like Yoda was. Whatever.
He's got 4 hours, sir. He's got 4 hours to get the job done.
I'm going to back this up. Nico, what were you talking about him walking up the stairs? Is that shot?
The shot? When you see it from behind and he's got the cloak moving, I mean, maybe I'm remembering it completely wrong, but I feel like that's what's going on. He's because I thought the same thing. I was like, there's no way that this is Palpatine because he just looks like he's moving too fast. He's just moving too much.
Well, he kneels down. If it's Palpatine...
Oh, then even still, yeah. What's he doing bending down? He's got a bad back.
but
he doesn't get the cane until Return. I'm serious.
Who is Palpatine kneeling down to?
Well, there's a line actually in the aforementioned Aftermath book that I've always been a little surprised and didn't get more speculation, it hasn't come up elsewhere, but there in one of the things in Aftermath is there's a gathering of the surviving basically Imperial bigwigs on this planet, and one of those bigwigs is a personal advisor to Palpatine, who at one point in the conference, when they're trying to figure out what they do next, he makes a comment that, you know, the dark side is flowing into the galaxy from the outer rim, from beyond the known galaxy in known Imperial space. And he's urging everybody to basically, let's head out that direction. Let's go to where the dark side is coming from. Mm. And that just kind of leaves you with the implication that the Emperor is answering to or an interaction with something else that's relating to the dark side elsewhere in the galaxy. So if that is really the Emperor and he's kneeling to something, maybe that's what it is. And it's not Snoke per se, but Snoke is clearly somebody that's from outside known Star Wars Imperial space, I think. Maybe it's something that's related to Snoke, if it's not Snoke directly.
And has been hinted as being around for, what, 1,000 years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and there's the other thing, too. Palpatine is the only one, I think, in out of the whole concept of the dark side, the apprentice and the master, to break that pattern. He's the only one that's been able to actually kill the master, which was Plagueis, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there could be a stronger connection with that character to, you know, whatever that is. What, Dave, what you were talking about, some sort of a bigger, darker force that he's having a connection with, which could be a Snoke reference. Doesn't have to be Snoke physically in the film, but if he is supposed to play out as this 1,000-year-old being that's had his hand in this whole thing all along, that could be a thing we should be looking at too. I mean, or at least see if it's spotted in this film. You never know. But I'm going to go back real quick to Nico. So I think the thing that you were talking about with the cloaked figure walking pretty fast, I think it's one of the admirals that you might be thinking of, Nico, where it looks like he's moving. And it's shadowed, so it looks like it might be the darker cloak, but I think it's the other guy that they show in the trailer, who I don't know who it is yet. But anyway, sorry, I was just the only shot that I can remember, and I just went to check some screenshots. Is the scene where he's kneeling down in front of that glowing column. So
right.
I don't know. And I'll double check again after the cast tonight. We'll update it later.
Yeah, I think the one where he's walking, isn't he walking through like a battlefield and
water too?
The cape is sort of dragging along the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got to go back and watch the trailer again.
Well, here we are, guys. It's like a week away from Captain America, which means for me, it's probably going to be my first opportunity to get to see it on the big screen.
Has that been confirmed? Are we going to get a trailer during Captain America or this trailer?
Well, I am 90% positive we'll see this trailer in front of Captain America.
Yeah. I would be shocked if they didn't do it.
No.
Yeah, Disney marketing machine. Yeah. It's got to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. That's a safe bet.
So if that's the only connection to the Civil War reference here, can we just say because it's Disney and Star Wars related, who's excited to see Civil War?
I already have tickets.
I'm very excited about it. Yeah.
Is it next Friday?
Next Friday is the opening day. Starts. So there will be Thursday night as per usual. I think we're actually going on Saturday.
Nice.
Yeah.
That would be Saturday the 7th, or right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
So has it? And I'm don't mean to sidetrack away from the big awesome Star Wars, but can please tell me somebody has seen the trailer, the TV trailers that they've been playing for this, and the ultimate slam in DC's face with the new Spider-Man clips that they've shown.
No.
Has anyone seen this?
I've seen them, but I don't know how it's the ultimate slam.
Oh, come on! It's the punch. The Superman-Batman punch where Batman stops Superman's punch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess so.
But really it's Spidey and oh my goodness,
the Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier, thank you.
Wow.
Oh, I love that. I thought that was a great way of Marvel saying, "Yeah, we'll just keep moving on."
Yeah, that's going to be great. That first trailer when Spidey comes in at the very end was just great. Love it.
Yeah, I the last Captain America movie, Civil War, was Winter Soldier, was probably my favorite of all the Marvel Universe movies. I thought that was a really, really good movie.
It was. Excellent film. Excellent.
The first Avengers is still probably my favorite movie, but The Winter Soldier was just so, so, so good.
Yeah, I see that argument for sure. Possibly Avengers the more exciting, and really like the first time you saw all of these major superheroes on screen together at the same time. So that's a big feather in its cap, sure.
Yeah.
But I think that Winter Soldier is just a better all around movie. That's just me though. You can go either way.
Yeah.
So guys, do you follow Mark Hamill on Twitter? Because if you did, you got to see an Episode 8 trailer a couple weeks ago.
What?
Yep. Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill on Twitter. He's pretty prolific. Twitter and Facebook. And so he tweeted out, you know, follow me and I will post an Episode 8 trailer. And then a day or two later, that's exactly what he did. He posted a picture of his trailer. The trailer that he gets dressed in on the set of Episode 8.
So he's funny.
He is a funny guy.
He's just an old man.
You could almost say he's a joker.
A smooth 62.
You know, you could almost say that, and let me tell you why that'd be funny if you did. Whatever.
So, last week, the Royals...
Yeah,
the future king and his brother, who, come on, let's face it, that's got to be the greatest job ever. You just get to be in the royal family and just get to do F all, you know, who cares what's going on. That's really got to be the greatest gig ever. If I could have a job, it would be being
Prince Harry.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. I got an interview for that someday. But what I'm getting at is, so they visited the set, and how great to see these guys, you know, prim and proper Brits, if you will, standing around playing with lightsabers. It was a great image. It was put out on Twitter that I saw of the two of them playing with lightsabers, and also a hint of a shot at what really, really looks like an A-wing fighter in that movie too.
Oh, stop it. I have not seen this photo. Oh, I need to go.
I'll have to shoot that your way. I saw these on Twitter, and yeah, there was kind of a lot of the buzz in the old echo chamber from the pictures of, I think it was Harry, sitting in what looks like a cockpit of an A-wing fighter.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Yep. Must be nice.
And dailymail.co.uk has a nice doctored photo of Prince William and Harry mocked up as stormtroopers. Apparently, they filmed a short scene dressed in trooper gear. So we can look forward to trying to pick them out of Episode 8.
They'll be the ones with the British accent. Resistance scum.
Wait a minute, isn't there?
Now, since Greg brought this up, if there is a hint of an A-wing fighter, if any of those fighters start to appear, will they look like the original trilogy fighters, or will they have variations like the X-Wing had in Episode 7?
They have to have variations.
Yeah.
Have to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it ever possible, will we ever see any of those awesome expanded universe vehicles? What was it? There was the Z-95 Headhunter. One of the other ones. Was there an E-Wing as well, Dave? You know?
I don't remember an E-Wing.
Okay. I'm going to have to look that up.
It's been a while.
I know the Z-95 Headhunter was the predecessor to the X-Wing fighter, but with the possibility that it has stuck around like an old classic car.
That's cool. I love that. I loved in Star Wars Rebels and Clone Wars in the animated shows when they brought in the toys. And I think we talked about this on a previous episode, but a couple of the toys made it into the episodes as actual vehicles. And I think that's really cool when they pay homage to the stuff that we were playing with when we were kids. Pretty cool stuff.
Okay, I just looked it up. The E-Wing fighter was an actual fighter. Again, a variation with the wing. The S-foils are the wings of the X-Wing. Looks similar to an X-Wing, just with bent downward S-foils. And also, what was the other one? Steve, you mentioned the cartoons and stuff, the animated shows. They had the V-Wing was also one, which was a pretty cool-looking fighter. So please, any fighters, whether they're original trilogy or expanded universe or animated series, please bring them into the next episode. I'd be greatly appreciative of that.
Is it just me or does the E-Wing look a little bit like the like a Viper from Battlestar Galactica?
Totally.
I mean, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Ah.
Yeah, just enough.
I love the
Not
Viper.
Not so much that it's actionable.
It's a little blockier looking, but yes, totally.
I just posted a picture on the Hive Facebook page.
Nice.
I think it has to be approved by an admin, of which I am not, but you can find it there.
I thought everyone was an admin on there now.
No, I need to add the other guys. I don't think I've done that yet. But I will.
Well, thank you.
Apologize for the delay.
It's pretty much an A-Wing fighter. There's no way it can't be an A-Wing fighter.
Oh, this is going to be great.
All right, so guys, we had some other Star Wars news. Actually, we had some Star Wars news that was reported on by our own Scott Ivansky. We had a Star Wars costume exhibition at a local Scott, the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising in Los Angeles.
That is correct. FIDM in downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah, and you posted some really cool pictures of Star Wars The Force Awakens costumes. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I actually have quite a few more. I just didn't want to oversaturate the Hive. We were invited from some mutual friends of ours to go up and see this costume design museum with some of the more recent like films in the last 6 months or so. And unbeknownst to me, they had a Star Wars exhibit in one of the halls. And I turned the corner and there is Kylo Ren, the stormtrooper, the Finn stormtrooper outfit with the bloody handprint down the front of the mask. Oh, I sat there. I left the group. I'm like, you guys just move along. I'm going to be here for at least 30 minutes just analyzing every detail of every one of these costumes. Rey's costume was there. Full mask, everything from the beginning shots of Force Awakens. And two other characters. One I still am looking for. It's the small one. If you go to our Facebook page, I think I posted all six shots. Is that correct, Steve? I'm sorry, I'm lagging behind on my internet connection here.
All right, I can take a look.
I did find one of the odd background characters. He's the taller costume you'll see on our page that has a bullet, three-layer bullet necklace. He is in Maz Kanata's castle when you first... Han and his crew are walking through. You'll see him in one of the background shots. He's a normal human character wearing this. It's not an alien character. And I still haven't found the little guy yet. But I'm looking. I swear I'm looking for that guy. He might be in Maz Kanata's castle as well. I'm not sure yet. I have to freeze frame that entire sequence. But... why it was there, I think it was just a celebration of costume design, and like I said, it was just a wonderful surprise, a shock when I turned the corner and it was sitting there. And I just had to sit there and photograph the thing over and over again, every angle I could possibly get at.
Well, the
I actually had them ask me to step away from it because I was going over the barrier to get close-up shots of the Stormtrooper helmet.
Didn't you just tell them that you were with the Wretched Hive podcast?
Or? I did. It didn't work. It did work. The credit. You know what? I didn't have a badge. I didn't
back off, man. I host a podcast.
Well, the pictures look great. Thanks for putting those up. They look great. And Greg, your photo is up. You don't need to be an admin to post a photo, but you will be an admin soon anyway.
Excellent.
That way you can post as the Wretched Hive. But that looked really cool, Scott. I was so glad you could represent there.
Yeah, it felt good because it was one of those things. I'm like, damn, I could put this up on the Facebook page. I think it would be a great thing to show off. I mean, it was. Again, a shock. It really was a shock. I'm like, wow, how often do you just stumble across the actual costumes from and Finn's costume with the blood print on it. Oh, my God. I wanted to take that home so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They probably frown on that, Scott.
I think they do.
I think you could have gotten away.
Six guys tackled me while I was making a break for it, but whatever.
So cool. Good stuff. Well, we also had a few other news stories. So George Lucas, remember him?
Who is this?
A guy by the name of George Lucas used to do some Star Wars stuff.
Loves tuna sandwiches.
Bib for tuna. Where's my bib? I'm eating a tuna sandwich. Now, he was in the news because, as reported by io9.gizmodo.com, he has a great theory that I just love this about who is narrating the Star Wars movies anyway. You know, when the Star Wars movies start, you've got the crawl, the famous crawl that sort of sets the stage. Who is telling us that? Where is the narration coming from? Well, according to the maker, that narration is coming from none other than R2-D2. Quote, The entire story of Star Wars is actually being recounted to the keeper of the Journal of the Wills. Remember that? 100 years after the events of Return of the Jedi, by none other than R2-D2.
Yeah, this is... I'm sorry, Steve. I don't mean to interject right here. Are you
finished with that? Go right ahead.
Yeah, this is something that's actually been kind of common knowledge in the sense that he has always said that it's from the point of view of the two droids. He's never specifically said R2, but I do remember him in an earlier interview from the 80s saying something similar to the fact that the droids are telling the story.
Well, so, what I love about it is that if it is R2 telling the story from his point of view, you know, R2 is always the hero, always saving everybody, never makes a mistake, ready to help. He's everybody's best friend. And 3PO is just a bumbling, whining idiot the whole time. So, you know, kind of like you treat your family, you know, worse than you treat anybody else. I just love that thought that R2-D2 is just dissing 3PO and his recollection of the events of Star Wars.
Seems valid.
I also like the fact that the only way you understand R2 through the entire saga is through other people's point of view of how they interpret R2's beeps and bloops and whatever.
Right.
So here is the only way you're actually getting to know this story is through his story.
Okay, here's a question for you guys related to that. So I was excited for The Force Awakens Blu-ray because I thought I heard or remember someone saying that if you turn on the captions, BB-8's little bleeps and blurps and noises that he makes are not bleeps and blurps in the captions, but it was actually, you know, the English version of what he was saying. But of course I tried that and it just says beep, 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 you know, when he's talking. Do you guys remember anything about that or am I making that up?
No, I think somebody had a discussion. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think that had come up on the podcast. I don't know if it was confirmed it was something that would happen, but I remember we talked that maybe that would be a thing on, you know, the Blu-ray in the, just like you say, in the captions itself. So
yeah,
I think you're right, Greg. I thought we had talked about it on the podcast where And we'll get our researchers on this right away, right? So we can go back and check the archives. But yeah, wasn't it? They were talking about possibly using the dialogue that was spoken by Bill Hader and the other gentleman that did it. Who was it? I can't remember now.
That guy.
As the Blu-ray subtitles.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I remember that, and I don't know if it was rumor and we reported it as news, or I'm not sure, but I was disappointed when I turned on the captions and it was just beep, 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 you know. No. Can one of you guys write out, you know, like the words for me so I know what BB-8 said?
Great. I've seen it, not that I know anything about it, but one of the leaked copies of The Force Awakens has subtitles and has BB-8's entire script subtitled.
That's a leaked script?
Like I don't know. BB-8, all of BB-8's lines in this smuggled version of the film.
Oh,
okay. He's got all of his lines subtitled.
So it's not a script that you're reading that you read the lines. It's an actual
it's in the subtitles as hijacked. He's speaking.
Okay. Interesting. Not that any of the Wretched Hive would ever download an illegal video.
Not this one.
No. All right. Just making sure. Law-abiding, podcasting,
yes,
tax-paying citizens.
Totally on the up and up. Completely right. On the up and up.
Okay.
In more shape. So, I think I was going to put up the Star Wars, the R2-D2 story from IO9, which is one of my favorite websites. If you're just looking for crazy, stupid, nerdy stuff to read, go to IO9, pick an article. They have good writers. They're fun to lose your day on. But when I posted that, I mentioned something to you guys, and I kind of want your take on it here on the podcast. As I was going through the special features from The Force Awakens Blu-ray, no mention at all of George Lucas. None. The guy is just non-existent, even as a thank you, trying to work up to his vision. Did anybody find that weird, or was it just me?
Well, he was not in the hour-long the making of The Force Awakens. I thought he had a little bit part in that. Or am I making that up too?
I don't think he made an appearance in that at all.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't remember seeing him in that at all.
Not a mention of George in anything though.
It's an interesting point you bring up, Greg. And here's a funny thing too. Now that you mention it, it does seem odd, but what's funny is he's mentioned so much in the press tour leading up to the release of the film. If you remember any of the interviews, any of the silly stuff that was done with Harrison Ford on, like, say, Jimmy Kimmel or any of those shows, George Lucas's name was brought up, especially by J.J. Abrams whenever he was actually being interviewed. Tons and tons of just, like, he is the man responsible for this. He is the reason why we are all here. Lots of that kind of praise. But, yeah, on the actual disc itself, I don't remember hearing anything at all. And I'm wondering if it was purposely done that way to say, here's all your accolades, here's all your nice stuff that we're going to throw out there, and boom, now we're just going to start from scratch and move forward from this point. This is not George Lucas's world anymore. We scrapped the idea that he gave Disney, and we went with our own idea.
You know, and maybe I'm just comparing and contrasting with all of the prequel trilogy stuff where you had the spawn of Satan, Rick McCallum, just where George Lucas was this pretty much literally the every other word that came out of his mouth was George Lucas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to go and just say you're going easy on that guy, man. Spawn of Satan's just too nice.
George or Rick McCallum is the Glenn Frey of the Star Wars universe.
Oh no!
Wow,
yes.
That's too far.
He's the Glenn Frey of Lucasfilm. Wow, wow, wow! You heard it here, folks.
Oh
man, I thought this was going to be a positive show too.
So, I think it you listen to the podcast, right?
That's a good point. We really do. Rick McCallum caused a lot of problems when all of that crap was going on. It falls on his hands.
For his lack of intervention with George, is that what you're saying?
Completely. Seriously, rewatch those interviews with him. I guarantee you, by the second interview on the second DVD, you'll want to punch this guy in the face. Somebody back me up on this.
So, are you guys saying that it's not George's fault that the prequels weren't up to par? That it's Rick McCallum's fault?
Oh no, yes. I still think
100%. Nope, I'm going to blame it all on Rick McCallum, George Lucas. I love him.
No.
I have lots of issues with the whole George Lucas thing too, but I think Rick, you know what Rick McCallum was? He was an enabler. He was the dealer that wouldn't stop pumping the needle into one. That's what he was.
How much of the script did Rick McCallum write?
Exactly.
What Scott, what you say there that rings true with me is that he said yes to everything George brought up. And somebody needed to tell him no. And Rick McCallum did not, I don't think, knew how to tell George Lucas no.
I think you're right.
I agree with that. One of the Lucas biographies that I read, and I'm blanking on the title right now, but it talked about how Lucas actually didn't like the initial cut of The Empire Strikes Back and recut the movie himself and just produced something that was horrific, and it was basically Marshall Lucas and Erwin Kirshner who said, "No, George, no, we're doing it the other way. You have to do it the other way. That's what makes it a good story." There were people on those original trilogies that said no to him, and that was the last time that ever happened with a Star Wars project.
You need constructive people in there, especially talented people that can say no, especially when they know that there's right decisions to be made. In the case of Empire, if you don't have that, you're going to get crap.
Yeah.
You give them complete control. You know what you get? Mother trucking Ewoks.
Ewoks, baby.
Where was Marshall Lucas when they made the holiday special? That's all I want to know. On vacation?
They were rolling their cash. Their mountains of cash. That's what they were doing. That's
right. That was all Bruce Valanche. That's what I'm saying.
Well, in the original Star Wars, as it turns out, Obi-Wan Kenobi was meant to live, guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the original script, as revealed by Peter Mayhew on Twitter, who's another fun follow on Twitter, Peter Mayhew reviews that Obi-Wan survives his battle with Vader on the Death Star. And they get separated by those blast doors without Obi-Wan getting chopped in two. And Obi-Wan runs back and boards the Falcon and flies away with Luke and Han and the gang. So
I feel happy.
Jackpot.
So that movie might have been a little bit different too, had the original script bone. Actually, there were four or five or six versions of that script that sort of morphed over time.
Oh, I think at least that many. Yeah. I mean, that is just proof to young writers out there, you know, your first draft is probably not going to be your best work. Don't be afraid to keep chipping away at that stone. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, if you haven't checked out Peter Mayhew's Twitter to see all the script pages that he's been throwing out there, that's really, you know, if you've got some time on your hands, go and check that out. That's some good stuff.
You know what's also great is Very Lonely Luke. Have you read Very Lonely Luke?
Yes, I have. I love Very Lonely Luke.
We should have a Very Lonely Luke tweet of the week every week. We just need to pull something out, because first it was emo Kylo Ren that is hilarious, but lately I've been getting chuckles from Very Lonely Luke.
Han Solo is not bad either. He's not.
I was
going
to say, didn't they have a Twitter war at one point, or am I misremembering?
No, you're not.
You're not misremembering. That was great. Luke, Very Lonely Luke is. Depending on how this family situation plays out, is a terrible, horrible uncle to, you know, but the best terrible, horrible uncle ever. I've never seen somebody pick on emo Kylo Ren as bad as Very Lonely Luke.
So earlier today, Very Lonely Luke tweeted, "My dad was supposed to be the chosen one. He never learned to shoot lightning from his fingers. I'm not the only underachiever in the family." Here's another one. Leia didn't like the Force. She said it's wrong to sense future dangers. Yet somehow she always gave baby Kylo back to Han right before he pooped. It's just ridiculous. So can we do that? Can someone be in charge of the Very Lonely Luke tweet of the week for us?
Oh, since I'm kind of in charge of the Twitter page, I'll take care of that.
All right, thank you.
Ooh.
I will produce some a good intro for you. How about that? Yeah. We'll get your own Very Lonely Luke intro music.
Done.
All right. Good deal.
just I'm going to throw it out there. This is one of the little bits between Very Lonely Luke and emo Kylo Ren is Very Lonely Luke is asking emo Kylo Ren, "Kylo, what's up with the cape? It serves no purpose. If you're cold, stop being pretentious and put on a coat."
It's too good. It's too good.
Nice.
Well, just a couple other quick stories, guys. Disney, did you see that 360 view of the construction site at Walt Disney World for the new Star Wars land?
Yeah, very, very cute. Well, I don't want to say cute. I'm going to say very innovative use of this 3D photography or 360 degree photography technology.
Right.
And so you can circle around it and circle around it and see all the way around it. But did you know that you can look straight up to see the Millennium Falcon too? Did you
notice that? I missed that. Oh, I got to go see that right after the show. I'm going to go check. So you just look straight up and the Falcon is hovering above?
It's flying across the sky, but yeah, it's there.
Yeah,
cool.
So I was at Disneyland end of March, I'm going to say. End of March I went, and my quote-unquote secret source who works there said the thing to do now that people are doing quite a bit, since they're building the Star Wars land kind of in the neighborhood of where the parking garage is, there is a large contingent of people who gather there on a daily basis to take photographs from the top of the parking garage. So if you're going to Disneyland and you happen to park in the Mickey and Friends parking structure, walk up to the sixth floor and take a look to the east and maybe snap a couple photos and post them to the Wretched Hive Facebook page.
Awesome. That is awesome. We're going to have to plan a trip out there, guys, when that thing's open.
Oh, yeah.
We are going
It's only going to be $295 a person to get in when that opens.
You know what we also should talk about for this summer is I'm pretty sure that John Williams is doing a concert at the Hollywood Bowl in July. And I'm just saying there's not going to be a lot of chances to see that guy conduct orchestras in the future. I think he's like 80 or 81 at this point.
Yeah. Oh, I am in on that for sure. We got to get the whole Wretched Five there. Come on. We got to do this.
I would be down for that. That would be a good time. Yeah.
We got to rally around and support this guy so he makes it through all three of these movies.
No doubt. He better
be 97 by the time and still kicking, going strong with episode 9. That's all I'm saying.
Actually, it's going to happen at some point. I mean, this franchise is going to continue on under the ownership of Disney. At some point, somebody's going to have to be the first schmuck to score a Star Wars movie after John Williams.
You make a good point.
Pity that guy.
Dave, you actually make a good point. There was, in the mid-90s, early 90s, a multimedia event where they branched off and made a novel, made a bunch of like CD-ROM material, interactive material, and a video game for whatever the Nintendo console at the time was, called Shadows of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually made a soundtrack for the first time for a non-movie event. And I have that soundtrack, and it is an unbelievable soundtrack. And I don't remember the guy's name that did it, but he was a wonderful, wonderful composer. And I still listen to that thing to this day and love the music on there. So if you get a chance, look up Shadows of the Empire soundtrack and pick it up. Enjoy it.
So let's who would we pick for if we had our say in picking the successor to John Williams? Oof. Who would we think?
Boy, that's tough. I've got Alex Desplat, who is a French-born musician, and done several movies. He is actually doing Rogue One. John Williams is not doing Rogue One. It's Alexandre Desplat. He did The King's Speech and Benjamin Button and Argo and one of the Harry Potter movies, so very well accomplished.
Oh, that's great. He did one of the Harry Potter films?
Yeah, he did Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Okay, that's good, because that picks up the John Williams score from the original one. They use a lot of the same themes, so any composer that can pick up from a John Williams original score and work with it, I'm all in with that.
Right.
And Shadows of the Empire was done by Joel McNeely. Sorry.
Joel McNeely, thank you.
Just wanted to throw that in.
I would almost say like a Hans Zimmer type. I mean, he's got that big movie background. He's done the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, and I think he did some of the Batman movies too. I think he would be a good choice as well.
Okay, I'm throwing in my two cents. I think we're going to go with either Danny Elfman, because we need to spice it up a little bit, get a little funky, or... Mm-hmm. We're going to go with the Italian horror composer's favorite pick, Goblin.
Goblin?
Let's go with Goblin.
Why not?
Seriously, if you haven't heard Suspiria soundtrack, you need to pick that up right now. Right.
I will go out and listen to it. I have not heard it. I'm not familiar with Goblin's work. But I will say Elfman is also a good call. Yeah, Elfman, sure. Yeah, I would be behind that.
I think he would add something new to it. I was actually kind of being serious with Elfman on that. Goblin, I would definitely not want to hear.
I'm going to go different. I'm going to say Bear McCreary, who does the soundtrack work for The Walking Dead and did the soundtrack work for Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, nice.
Haunting music in The Walking Dead, for sure.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to throw out a second one just because I can. The guy who, I don't know if he did the second or the third, but the guy who did the first Iron Man movie, I thought that had a stellar soundtrack behind it. Also backed up by some Tom Morello guitar in that as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could do without the Tom Morello, but I think that guy did a good job with the first Iron Man movie.
Kevin Kiner was the... producer of the music for Star Wars: The Clone Wars, and I thought
that was an awesome, awesome movie.
I thought he did.
at least that's what I've heard.
You little shit.
Well, he actually, I'm sure he did the movie too, but he did the music for the whole series, and I actually love the music for The Clone Wars. I thought it was great.
I love the score for Rebels. There's a lot of callbacks to the old Star Wars. That's part of what makes that show feel very Star Wars is the score for Rebels.
I don't know if that's
fantastic
Kevin
job doing that.
Is that, do you know if that's Kevin Kiner as well or if that's somebody else?
I do it myself, actually.
no, it is. It is Kevin Kiner. He does Rebels as well.
He's doing a fantastic job. Yeah. Let him have it. Sold. Boom.
I'm quite alarmed right here. I just looked up on IMDb's top 30 film composers. John Williams falls in at number 4.
What?
Oh. Who's numbers 1 through 3?
Numbers 3 is Michael Giacchino.
Giacchino, I think.
Giacchino, who did Lost. Mm-hmm. Number 2 is James Horner.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I was trying to think of him.
Corner. And yeah, I get
number
that.
Number 1 is Hans Zimmer. I'm sorry. I think just sheer Oscar nominations alone, John Williams should be sitting at number 1 right there.
Yes, that list is valid. I reject it totally.
Of course.
I reject it totally. Yeah. Too.
Of course, Hans Zimmer's best work is when he said, "Shoot the glass."
I'm sorry. That's Hans Gruber.
Oh,
sir.
Oh,
Hans
sorry.
Gruber.
Sorry. My bad.
Yippee-ki-yay.
That, sir.
Thank you.
Seriously, John Williams is sitting with over 42?
I thought it was over 50. Isn't it over 50? Wasn't that the big deal? It was like his 50th was this past year for Force Awakens?
Oscar nominations?
Yeah.
Oh, it says 41 on here. I'll have to double check that. That doesn't seem right either. It says he's won 5.
Huh. Still not enough Oscar wins for... He was robbed down the line. The only reason they gave it to Ennio Morricone this year is because he's about to die.
Yeah.
So he did Star Wars, Jaws, Superman, Close Encounters,
Raiders,
and Empire. That's basically like a 5-year run that he did all that original music in.
And then continuing on, he did Harry Potter. Yep.
Yeah.
He did JFK. He did Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park too. I'm not trying to downplay the later stuff at all, but I was thinking about that, like when he first kind of exploded into, I think, public consciousness, like all that, any one of those films would have been a career for any other composer.
And yeah, starting with Jaws, what, 73, 74 for Jaws?
75.
Yeah.
75. So the next 10 years for him are incredible.
Oh, you can even back it up before Jaws, because right before Jaws, he did Towering Inferno, he did The Cowboys, he did Sugarland Express. Then you go all the way up through what you guys were just talking about. It's insane what he did.
And who can forget the Sugarland Express theme song?
I know. I listen to that every day.
Is it sad that I actually know that?
It's you,
so
Scott,
I'm gonna go back to my original statement, starting with Jaws.
Hey man, Goldie Hawn rocks that film.
Your Sugarland Express is invalid.
Sure, that is Spielberg's debut feature. I know Sugarland Express, but I could not tell you anything about that movie today.
All right, guys, we have one last story to report on, and put this one under the category of fishing for clicks. You know, you put Star Wars in the title of a story, and you're going to get clicks on the internet. And I just found this to be incredibly amusing. This is from swimmingworldmagazine.com. They have an article called "How Star Wars Reflects a New Era of Swim Coaching."
What?
Yep. True. I'm not making this up. This is an article written by a swim coach, and he compares how training athletes used to be more like Luke, but nowadays they're more like Rey, where Luke was full of drive when, you know, he wanted to learn the ways of the Force, dedication, trust. You know, he trusted yoga, like he trusted, like Daniel trusted Mr. Miyagi in The Karate Kid. He has high expectations, and he responds to high expectations. You know, do or do not, there is no try, Yoda says. Whereas today's athletes are more like Rey. They just figure, like The Force Awakens, magically on its own, with little or no training. You don't have to work hard. Rey, without any training, out-engineers Han Solo on his own ship. She out-lightsabers Kylo Ren. And, you know, it's just a millennial generation of me, me, me. I just get things because I am here.
Yeah, Nico.
And so basically it's all Nico's fault. But
that's not me.
But this Swimming World magazine, the best part of this, has a quite disturbing picture of a stormtrooper in a Speedo.
That's how I picture all my stormtroopers right there.
That's disturbing, Greg. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to need more beer for that conversation.
Oh.
And with that, what a better way to close the show. Well, guys, episode 9 is in the books. Big show tonight. Yep.
Woo!
We are closing in on our 10th episode. That's a benchmark for us, guys. 10 coming up next time.
I didn't know if we were going to make it.
That makes 5 of us. Well, if you'd like to interact with us and tell us why we're not going to make it to episode 10, you can leave us a voicemail.
Hold on. I'm sorry. I got to leave a message real quick. Hey, Wretched High Podcast, this is Greg again. I just wanted to say we just finished recording episode 9. It's probably our best episode yet. Keep up the good work. Sorry about that.
I'm going to listen to that tomorrow morning when I'm when I'm on my way to work wondering what the hell we did last night. But you can leave us a voicemail too if you call 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. And you can also email us at wretchedhive@yahoo.com. Check us out on Facebook. We've got our Facebook page is happening. Facebook.com/wretchedhivepodcast. You can post to us at Instagram at @thewretchedhive_podcast. We're on Twitter, but I don't think we ever tweet. But we're on Twitter.
Occasionally.
The occasional tweet. Give us a follow. Maybe we'll tweet more. @WretchedHivePod.
Wretch Hive Pod.
Wretch Hive Pod. Thank you.
Yes.
And the best way to interact with us, I think, is through iTunes. Go to your podcast app on your smartphone or on the podcast section of your iTunes on your computer and search for The Wretched Hive. We're the first one that comes up there. Subscribe to the show. Leave us a review. 5 stars, 1 star. We don't care. Any stars. We just want to hear from you, our loyal listeners. And we're so grateful that you've checked us out here in episode 9. Guys, have a great couple of weeks. And we'll see you very soon. And may the Force be with us all.
Happy May the Force be with you, everybody.